The old world order is coming to an end. A new world order is emerging. The betrayal of Gaza stands as one of the most profound moral failures of the early 21st century, a slow-motion abandonment that shredded the post-Holocaust promise of never again and exposed the fragility of international law when confronted by raw power and political expediency. For 29 months, from October 2023 onward, the world watched as Gaza endured unrelenting devastation. Homes reduced to rubble, hospitals targeted, children starved, entire families erased. The images were inescapable: starving infants, amputees without anesthesia, mass graves dug by hand. Yet the response from those who claimed guardianship of global norms was, at best, impotent rhetoric and, at worst, active complicity through vetoes, arms shipments, and diplomatic cover. Never again was born from the ashes of Auschwitz and Treblinka, a vow etched into the conscience of humanity after the industrialized murder of 6 million Jews and millions more. It became the moral cornerstone of the post-1945 order, the Genocide Convention in 1948, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Nuremberg Principles declaring that crimes against humanity transcend borders and sovereignty. Yet in Gaza, that promise fractured. UN experts, including the Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories, described patterns consistent with genocide, killing members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm, deliberately inflicting conditions calculated to bring about physical destruction. The Independent International Commission of Inquiry found Israeli authorities responsible for war crimes and crimes against humanity, including starvation as a method of warfare, extermination, gender persecution, and forcible transfer. The International Court of Justice, ICJ, in provisional measures ordered in January 2024, found it plausible that acts prohibited under the Genocide Convention were occurring and mandated Israel to prevent such acts, ensure aid delivery, and punish incitement. Subsequent orders and advisory opinions reinforced obligations to facilitate humanitarian access, including for UNRWA, and declared aspects of the occupation unlawful. These were not obscure legal footnotes. They were binding pronouncements from the world's highest court and authoritative UN bodies. Yet compliance was minimal. Israel restricted or blocked aid, UNRWA faced suspensions, crossings closed for months, humanitarian corridors militarized or privatized into deadly chaos. By 2025 to 2026, famine conditions reemerged, with rations slashed to fractions of caloric needs, prostheses for thousands of amputees blocked, and medical evacuations halted. Over 70,000 Palestinians killed, likely far more when indirect deaths from disease, starvation, and lack of care are counted, 1 in 5 children worldwide living in conflict zones with Gaza as the epicenter of suffering. The world knew, real-time satellite imagery, journalist dispatches, NGO reports, and still the machinery of accountability stalled. The international community's abandonment was institutional. The UN Security Council, paralyzed by repeated US vetoes, failed to enforce ceasefires or humanitarian pauses. Resolutions demanding immediate halts to hostilities, unconditional aid access, and hostage releases were blocked, often the lone dissenting vote from Washington, despite near universal support from other members. Humanitarian pauses were proposed and vetoed, calls for compliance with ICJ orders ignored. The U.S., Israel's staunchest ally, continued military aid while decrying civilian casualties in carefully hedged language, framing the conflict as self-defense against Hamas while sidestepping the broader siege and occupation. Allies in Europe and elsewhere issued statements of concern but rarely translated them into concrete pressure, sanctions deferred, arms exports sustained, diplomatic recognition intact. This was not mere inaction. It was selective blindness. The promise of never again had been invoked selectively for decades, rightly for the Holocaust, for Bosnia, for Rwanda in hindsight, but in Gaza, the calculus shifted. Political alliances, lobbying influence, and strategic interests trumped universal principles. The result, a people confined to an open-air prison, subjected to bombardment and blockade, while the global order that professed to prevent such horrors looked away or enabled it. The betrayal deepened with each veto, each delayed convoy, each thoughts and prayer statement from capitals that could have acted but chose not to. Hubris always exacts a price. The architects of this order, those who built institutions on the ashes of World War II to prevent repetition, assumed moral authority was self-sustaining, that power could indefinitely override law and conscience without consequence. They were wrong. Empires that rise do fall, often not through battlefield defeat but through the erosion of legitimacy. When the promise of never again becomes a slogan rather than a binding ethic, When international law is enforced selectively, when the suffering of one people is deemed tolerable for geopolitical convenience, the seeds of destruction are sown. Now the bill arrives, and it arrives with the inexorable force foretold in Frank Herbert's Dune, a saga where power, resource control, and the inexorable cycles of rise and fall intertwine in ways that feel prophetic rather than fictional. Three metaphors from the Dune universe frame the current geopolitical earthquake with eerie precision. First, the epigraph from Princess Irulan in Children of Dune: if history teaches us anything, it is simply this: every revolution carries within it the seeds of its own destruction. And empires that rise will one day fall. This sober warning echoes through the events of March 2026. The United States, architect and enforcer of a post-World War II order built on unchallenged military projection, dollar hegemony, and selective moral authority, now confronts the self-inflicted wounds of its own overreach. What began as a moral revulsion at impunity in Gaza has metastasized into a structural challenge. The empire's insistence on absolute support for Israel, even amid documented horrors, has sown resentment across the global South and fractured alliances closer to home. Every escalation, decapitation strikes during fragile ceasefires, diversion of defensive systems from Ukraine and the Indo-Pacific, plants deeper seeds of backlash. The assassination of Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei on February 28, 2026, amid ongoing negotiations, shattered any remaining diplomatic trust. His son Mujtaba Khamenei, hardened by personal and familial losses, has vowed vengeance and sustained resistance, refusing ceasefires without systemic redress for Palestine. History, as Irulan reminds us, does not permit perpetual assent. The very mechanisms that elevated the U.S. to superpower status now expose vulnerabilities when confronted by determined, asymmetric resistance. Second, the iconic line attributed to Baron Vladimir Harkonnen: he who controls the spice, controls the universe. In Herbert's cosmos, melange, the geriatric spice, is the linchpin of interstellar civilization. It extends life, expands consciousness, and enables guild navigators to fold space. Control of Arrakis therefore equates to control of everything. In our analog, oil, and to a lesser extent liquefied natural gas, plays the spice's role. For decades, the U.S. has dominated the flows, not always by direct possession of reserves, but through naval supremacy securing sea lanes, alliances guaranteeing friendly producers, and the petrodollar system ensuring demand for dollars. The Strait of Hormuz, through which roughly 20% of global oil once passed daily, became the modern Arrakis choke point. Iran's effective closure, or severe restriction, of the strait, backed by missile threats, mining, and insurance cancellations, has upended that control. Traffic has collapsed to a trickle. Gulf producers curtail output as storage overflows. Rerouting attempts via Bab el-Mandeb face fresh Houthi threats of disruption. The petrodollar itself trembles as Iran experiments with yuan or ruble-denominated passage for aligned cargoes. The old order's architects, Washington and its closest allies, suddenly discover that nominal control means little when the flow itself can be interrupted. Yet the deepest insight comes from a subtler observation in the Children of Dune miniseries adaptation, echoing Herbert's themes. It's not who controls the spice, but who has the ability to disrupt the spice. This inversion captures the essence of the present moment. The United States may still boast the largest navy, the most advanced fighters, and the deepest strategic reserves, but Iran, supported indirectly by Russian intelligence, Chinese economic hedging, and a network of proxies, has demonstrated that superior power lies in disruption. By sustaining missile barrages, choking Hormuz, and threatening secondary choke points, Tehran imposes costly empire struggles to match sustainably. U.S. munitions burn through years' worth in weeks, interceptors are diverted from other theaters, allies quietly reassess basing agreements as American protected sites draw fire they cannot fully repel. The carriers, once symbols of unchallenged projection, now operate under constant threat in a world of hypersonics and drone swarms. The bluff has been called overwhelming conventional might falters against the willingness to endure pain and impose asymmetric attrition. The rage that ignited this reckoning, willingness to welcome systemic collapse if it ends impunity, reflects a deeper truth: when moral exhaustion meets material overextension, the fall accelerates. Ordinary publics in the West, numb or distracted by mediated images of suffering, failed to halt the machine through general strikes or mass withdrawal of consent. Now the pain arrives viscerally at the pump and in the wallet. The International Energy Agency's record 400 million barrel release, March 11, 2026, the largest in history, buys weeks, perhaps months, but depletion looms by late June if disruptions persist. Oil prices climbed toward $100 plus per barrel, with worse scenarios forecasting $135-$200. European benchmarks like TTF gas surge, fuel equivalents near 20 euros per liter become imaginable in high-tax markets. This pocketbook shock, far more immediate than distant atrocities, ignites the mass demonstrations, general strikes, and electoral revolts long absent. Europe, especially Germany, stands at the epicenter of vulnerability. Berlin's energy wind, phasing out nuclear and accelerating coal reductions, has narrowed options to imported gas and intermittent renewables, leaving electricity prices hostage to global fossil volatility. France cushions itself with nuclear baseload. Poland and Spain retain coal or strong solar decoupling. The US, China, Russia, and Japan draw on diverse domestic sources. Germany, however, faces acute industrial pain, fiscal strain, and political erosion. Chancellor Merz's coalition clings to fiscal orthodoxy and unwavering commitments to Ukraine aid, Russia sanctions, unconditional Israel support, while southern states, Ireland, Spain, Italy, chafe at moral hypocrisy over Gaza, and Hungary/Slovakia push for pragmatic energy realism by easing Russian import curbs. The oil crisis amplifies every fracture. Uneven pain distribution risks veto cascades, policy reversals, or outright EU cohesion breakdown. Germany either bends, softening stances to avert domestic revolt and early elections, or becomes the fulcrum on which the bloc splinters. Iran's posture underscores the disruption paradigm. Succession to Mojtaba Khamenei has fused vengeance with strategic clarity. No off-ramp exists after strikes during active negotiations. Trust is shattered. Tehran demands not mere de-escalation but systemic redress, Palestine decolonized, the Zionist entity dismantled, conditions politically impossible for a U.S. administration beholden to pro-Israel networks and lobbying influence. Attempts at face-saving withdrawal falter against this maximalism. The regime's decades-long preparation, missile proliferation, proxy hardening, currency hedging, now executes with precision, turning U.S. bases from assets into liabilities and alliances into burdens. In Dune's wisdom, every revolution carries the seeds of its own destruction, and empires fall because they forget that power without legitimacy is brittle. The abandonment of Gaza was that forgetting made manifest, a hubris that assumed impunity forever. The price is not abstract justice deferred, it is the unraveling now underway, economic chaos, geopolitical realignment, the cracking of the facade that once claimed to uphold a rules-based world. The bill is due, and history, unforgiving, presents it in full. What emerges is not mere collapse but transformation, a multipolar dawn where disruption forces equity, where the old order's moral bankruptcy gives way to a new, if turbulent, enlightenment. The spice flows no longer on Washington's terms. And in that simple fact lies the beginning of an ending, and perhaps, at long last, the seeds of something fairer.